Do you ever feel like your brain just has too many tabs open? You can't focus, relax, or sleep soundly? For me, I was looking for something to help me focus without looking to another cup of coffee. And don't get me wrong though, there's still plenty of coffee involved. About 7 years ago though, I found Brain.fm, functional music designed by neuroscientists to help you achieve whatever state of mind you need. Brain.fm uses cutting-edge science to create music that actually changes your brainwave patterns. Need to focus on that looming deadline? Their focus program can help you achieve laser focus so you can get things done. Feeling stressed after a long day? Their relaxed program can melt away tension and leave you feeling calm. And for a restful night's sleep, their sleep program uses scientifically proven soundscapes to lull you into a deep, restorative slumber. All it takes is 15 minutes of listening to kickstart the neural entrainment and get you going. Now, I'm happy to say that I partnered with Brain.fm, and if you use my coupon code PRGSCOACH when you sign up, you'll get 20% off of your subscription. Head over to Brain.fm when you're ready to achieve greater control over your state of mind. Welcome to the Progress Over Perfection Coaching Podcast, where we talk about career management and development by offering insight on how to build an intentionally balanced and purpose-filled career. I had the pleasure in this episode of connecting with longtime friend and past colleague Ryan Reichert-Estes. Ryan has what he refers to as a portfolio career, spanning marketing in the wine industry to learning and development at Nike, and most recently a remote. He also runs his own coaching practice that helps individuals find their own sense of purpose so they can lead meaningful and fulfilling careers. Ryan has unique insight into how individuals and organizations can tap into learning as a mechanism to maximize return, on top of how to navigate taking a career abroad beyond how many may traditionally consider that kind of move through a corporation. I can't wait to share this conversation, so let's get to it. All right, Ryan, thanks for joining me today. I'm really happy to have you on.
Yeah, really glad to be here. Thanks, Patrick.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things I like to do when I have a guest on that I've got a relationship with is kind of reflect a little bit back on kind of how we came to meet and kind of why you came to mind as being somebody I thought would be great for the show. And I think there's so many times since we've known each other for 14, going on 15 years now, I think like just, it's gone by fast. Yeah. Where there have just been intersections at like really unexpected times. And so I think you've always just been there as somebody that just felt connected to and known that I could reach out to no matter the random connection. So you always also seem to be walking a similar path a couple steps ahead. So you've been a very good mentor and advice giver in that regard. So really happy to have you on.
Yeah, same here. And honestly, it's kind of amusing to me that feeling exists for me in the reverse, because I think at sometimes you've been a couple steps ahead of me. So it's really cool, cool that we've been able to help each other.
Awesome. Well, cool. So I think one of the main things we like to do in these kinds of deep dive episodes is to really dig into a career and talk about, you know, what makes unique careers unique and what does success look like and paint different pictures of what success look like. So maybe could you just start by walking through your career, kind of the highlights and what stood out to you?
Yeah. So I was taught, I don't know, maybe about 10 years ago, that apparently I have what's called a portfolio career, which is more and more common, I think, these days. But I never really understood, like, what do I want to do? Because I worked in retail. I worked for my grandfather's nursery as a teenager. I worked at a recruiting company. And then I went into the wine business after school. And, you know, then I was at Nike. So it's like, I've got this weird, like, nonsensical path that I've taken. And then somebody said, well, no, you've been building experiences that are probably all related to one another. And, you know, so, you know, I've had a fun time in my career, but I've never always known like what the next step is going to be. I think, you know, really maybe about 10 years ago, I got connected with really understanding what my purpose was. And I have to say, like, that's the thing that's helped me make choices all along the way. So, So I've done a lot of marketing work. I was in the wine business for seven or eight years, doing a lot of sales and marketing. I thought I was going to keep going in the wine business at some point, but then made the switch to working in HR at Nike, which was, again, never expected. It wasn't on my radar. But then I found a place there and really got connected with not only some cool people, but some cool work in the manager development space, and just didn't look back because it was fun. Mm-hmm. And at this point, I have landed in a startup as of about a year and a half, almost 2 years ago, called Remote. And I've been with them working in the learning and development area still since getting there.
Awesome. That's great. I think touched on it a little bit over the past 10 years, finding that purpose and using that as kind of like a deciding force, as well as kind of taking what comes. Reflecting back, can you think on specific inflection points or pivot points and maybe what the decision process was like? Like maybe going from the wine industry into HR.
And it's interesting. I've definitely been able to go back and look through my life and my career and see like, oh, here's a big moment that I clearly was making a change. And so yeah, I moved across the country back in 20 gosh, well, 2009. It wasn't 2019, it was 2009, from Ohio to Oregon. And that was one of those moments where I'm like, I can't do what I want in this space, this environment. Like, I wanted to be in the wine business full time. So I'm like, I've got to go someplace where I can do that. And that's got to be California, probably Oregon. It ended up being Oregon. So that was what took me there. So it was really like, how do I get more of what I'm looking for? And then after, a number of years, I was loving the work, but wasn't feeling really fulfilled. And so I think it was internal. What could make this better, or what could give me more of what I want? And, really started thinking about what are my different paths in this industry. Decided, hey, if I go back to school and get a supply chain degree, maybe I can work in the import export business. That seemed like a place to be. Realized at that point that it was a complete like wrong turn for my way of working and for the way that I think. And so ended up not going in that direction. Ended up leaving the wine industry after the master's program that we both went through, and then found my way to Nike simply because I needed a job at that point. And so, like, I wish I could say, "Oh yeah, I always wanted to work at a huge sports company," but it was one of the best moves I think I'd ever made. Like, I was there for almost 10 years and just got so many experiences, which was super cool. And then leaving was hard because I did love my work. I love the company. But my husband and I were both in a place where, 2020 plus a couple of years, and we're thinking, okay, we want to be somewhere else. We don't feel like Oregon is the place that is going to be home for us long term. And so we had this goal that we would move to Europe, specifically to Spain. And then so that meant then going through the process of like figuring out who can I work for that can help us get there. And so I've just shortened all everything I just said down. It's kind of like always using the guide of like what's going to get us to that next thing that we really want, and help us succeed or continue to grow.
I love that too, that you differentiated between enjoyment and fulfillment. Like you enjoyed the work, but it wasn't fulfilling. I think we'll probably dig into that in a couple questions in a little bit as we kind of work our way down the list. But definitely a diverse path there. Was there anything that you can think of, kind of as you maybe have reached a pivot point or an opportunity for a change, where you chose not to take it? Like, what was the decision process like there that said, "Eh, this has these things I like, but ultimately not for me."
I mean, I think at most of those moments there was probably one because there was something that made sense usually. I remember I majored in like three different things in undergrad before I just finally got a business degree, and I got the business degree because it was logical and I could use it to get, like, I mean, so it was that whole what makes sense kind of mentality. But I moving to Oregon and leaving my desk job, as it were, to like be in the wine business. I mean, that no to that, which could have been a very stable, probably very, good career. Then, I mentioned going into a different part of the wine trade, thinking that I would do supply chain. And I'm like, I realized that it just doesn't mesh with who I am. And so decided, okay, then I need to rethink that. So definitely, had to say no there. And then honestly, I think the biggest one was probably the most recent, which was leaving Nike, leaving Oregon. We didn't have a bad life there at all. It's a beautiful place, as you know. Just really saw that, okay, I'm continuing to grow, like all this stuff is in the right place. we could be very happy, but it's just not quite what we're looking for. And so, like, having to say no to that, which then had its own ramifications and consequences, was hard. But at the end of the day, like, I look at where we are now and I'm like, yeah, I would never change it.
That's awesome. That's great. And I mean, I think you talked through some of these things as well, but was there anything that stands out as like a common theme for things that tend to be the hardest decision point to wrestle with? Is it whether it's like you're saying, like environment or family? Was there anything that stands out as like, oh, this is tough for me to try and get over to see if there's something better?
That's a great question, because I mean, it's scary doing anything like that. And I think there are a lot of things that can be connectors or almost weights sometimes for us that hold us in place. And so, I mean, the big one for me, usually was some version of, how am I going to know if this was the right thing? Like, I'm going to worry about what I'm going to look back and think in retrospect, and like, how will I ever know if it was the right choice? And that kind of thing, you have to work through. And I mean, obviously coaching has helped with that. But I would say early on in my career, and think something that I think I had to learn was really getting connected to like my leader or a specific manager that was really inspirational and that was really great at helping me develop and maybe somebody that I aspired to like grow toward. And then when they would leave, it would feel not great. And then sometimes you make a decision to leave another person in a job. And I think I realized very quickly, like, we can't control that, just given that moving around. And so you had to kind of let go, like, hey, I can't move just because of another human in the industry or a human in this job. I can still care for them and stay connected, but I have to like forge my own path versus following.
Oh man, I think that hit a really like resonant note for me too, thinking about that, like finding, oh, you build those deep relationships and like you almost what's the you hitch your horse to that wagon kind of thing. I'm like, oh man, but now what do I do now that it's gone? So I think that's an awesome discovery piece to say, how do I find my own path? And then I think kind of shifting gears a little bit, kind of focusing on your move abroad. I think that's a common theme through a number of guests we've had on, and I think a common career aspiration for a number of different people. So super curious, can you talk about kind of your experiences in moving abroad? Like, what were the challenges? And then maybe what do you wish you knew before you started that whole journey?
Sure. Yeah. Oh, so many things. The list isn't as long as I joke about, but so the experience was interesting, because I mean, we originally like came up with the plan. Like, if I go really back to the root of it, the plan was our 2020 escape plan, because who knew what the election was going to look like at that point in time. And so, husband, like, he's a researcher at heart, and he basically Venn diagrammed all the best places to live, the like places that had good economies and were open to expats and health insurance and transportation, yada 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 yada. And in the middle of that diagram were like Spain and Portugal and a couple other places. And so for us, it was kind of an exit strategy that then, when we realized, oh, we don't need to employ this, hey, wouldn't that actually be like a cool retirement plan? And it kind of felt like we had just done all this work to figure where we were going to go after we were done working. But then I think as things continued to shift, we really got clear on like, I feel like this isn't where we need to be right now. And we started asking the question, I'll like actually need to give credit. My husband was like, I think we need to do something different. Like, I think we need to think big. And that's always for me. I've always been like, oh yeah, I think big. And then I'm like, oh, wait a second, in retrospect, maybe wasn't. And so I'm like, okay, great, where are we going? And he's like, I think we need to move to Spain. So it was a journey for sure. Looking for a new role, finding organizations that obviously at that point in time, it was still like working from home mostly, with people were starting to go back into the office. And then a place that would obviously be supportive of moving abroad and didn't care where we lived. And the whole process of the immigration. ordeal, and it didn't take as long as it could have, but it always in the moment feels like it takes
Yeah.
so long. And then after getting here, I think, we had maybe about a month and a half, so 6 weeks or so that we had set aside for finding a home and doing all that stuff. When I think back to like what was challenging, I wish I would have known then that we should have given ourselves more time to really get acclimated, really get acquainted with what real estate looked like here. I don't think I regret the decisions that we made, but I
Yeah.
also look back at that and I'm like, oh, I think we made some of those decisions out of a place of worry or panic
Okay.
when would have actually taken a de like a deep breath and
Yeah.
but that all said though, I mean the transition work-wise has been pretty easy. My job hasn't dramatically changed. A lot of the people that I work with are still the same. And the nice thing about my current company is we work asynchronously and everybody's remote, so
Yeah.
it really made sense. I think at the end, like the only thing I probably would have done differently is, in full transparency, I think I would have invested a little more in my mental health.
Oh, yeah.
I went through a period last summer, like right after we got here, that was super hard. We just ended up not in a great place. And so I think if I were to be able to go back, like I would say, hey, like start talking to your therapist a little earlier and
Yeah.
do some of these things that are going to help support you through a harder time. But things have moved forward, which is great as they do. And yeah, we're feeling pretty good.
That's great. Start to finish. I mean, maybe aside from the research from when you guys decided to pull the trigger, how long did that take between, all right, let's do this, and you being boots on the ground?
Yeah. I mean, like the day that we were standing in the kitchen and he was like, we need to think about it. That was like just at the beginning of March 2022.
Okay.
And then we flew into France and then drove to Spain. And we were in Spain, I think, on February 16th, 2023. So
Okay.
just under a year.
Oh wow. Okay. That's great. It's an inch, I mean, very different also experience from some of the other stories we've heard as well, because this was entirely you guys figuring it out, doing everything by yourself instead of the expat, hey, here's this nice package, get on a
Right.
plane, box up, oh, we'll box up your stuff kind of thing. So I think it's a good contrast to kind of show the amount of work that goes into all those things.
For sure, for sure. And I mean, we definitely had some help from the perspective of given our organization helps like manage relocations for clients or for customers, we had connections to say, oh, go work with that shipping company,
Oh, yeah.
with this person for your visa. I had an amazing support person who actually helped us through that whole process, which was really awesome. But yeah, so much of it we just really had to drive ourselves.
That's great. I think you offer some really good insight too, in like different ways to try and plug in so that it doesn't need to be completely alone. And as well, how do you integrate that in with everything else? It's not a, all right, I'm going to go move and then I'm going to figure it out. It's like, all right, I've got to figure out the job situation, leverage the support systems that are in place there, and then make sure it fits for your whole life. And it's not just it's turning everything on its head, but in a relatively controlled way.
Somewhat, for sure.
Yeah. Cool. Maybe kind of pivoting a little bit. So I've looking back, notice I've had a few folks on from the L&D space. So there might be some inherent bias in folks that I like to talk to on these shows. But maybe can you talk a little bit about your approach to learning and development? And I know you talked about like manager development and leader development in particular. Can you maybe walk us through how you look at those things and what they've meant to you in your career?
Sure. Yeah, I would say that one of the biggest values that I gained early on in my current HR experience was learning about design thinking as a concept, as a way of working. So if you're not familiar with design thinking, IDEO has a ton of resources. I would absolutely recommend anybody go check them out. Like if you're somebody who creates experiences or creates content for people. So it just really puts the human and the consumer at the center. And so when I say consumer, I'm typically talking about an employee or a manager. And so that process, which just like not only did I get exposure to it theoretically, but then everybody around me was using it. And so we were learning it together and using it to design, going through that process of brainstorming and iteration and getting feedback from a prototype and then iterating again. It makes the work really enjoyable. And honestly, since then, I have nothing against people that go and do like super instruction or super traditional instructional design. But I have to say, like, for me, the process is more fluid, and I'm somebody who doesn't do well with like really rigid structure. So say like if you're an Addy person, great, that's awesome. That's one way of doing it. And so that was super important in terms of like how I look at manager and leadership development. One of the things for me very early on was really having a great manager. And so I had probably the person that is the best manager I've ever had, who has changed my life in so many ways. Her name's Lisa. She really showed me like what it was like to have a person leading you who knows how to coach people, who cares about people, who cares about people as people rather than just thinking about them as an employee in a box. And so getting that experience and then realizing what it allowed me to do and like the progress that it helped me make in my career was just proof in and of itself that we could actually just even help every manager be a little bit better. Like we could really change people's lives because I mean we spend so much time at work. Why should we be miserable? And then just generally, I think one of the things that I really always go to is the idea that so much of the content in this space is behavioral based. And you can't learn that walking into a classroom and sitting and being lectured at. My philosophy has always just really leaned on the idea of practice and application. And so, like, I don't design a lot of really slide heavy content for these groups. I really believe in the power of helping people learn together, and creating spaces where they can connect and talk and try things because I believe that in that experimental space of like doing something with someone where there's not a whole lot of risk is going to help you be just a little bit better at it when you have to somebody you're leading. And so for me, experiential, behavior-based, practice-based, that's where it's at.
It seems like it's a good challenge to kind of the normal, like, all right, here's the this year's version of this training, read through the slides, we'll track in our LMS that you've taken it, and managers, please make sure everybody in our team's taking it by the end of the week, kind of thing.
Oh, totally. And it's like, and that costs such an enormous amount of money and time and energy from people to put folks through that kind of thing where so often, and I've been through some really good traditional management experience, like management courses. I know, even though I'm somebody who loves this space, I like spent 3 days there and learned a lot and then did absolutely nothing with it. Just no fault of anybody's. Sometimes the system you've got just isn't set up to support it. So it's, and it can be kind of disheartening. Like you learn all these great things and then go back to your job and want to apply them, but other people are pushing back or like, the organization you're in hasn't really gotten there. And so it's just tough. And I think you've got to give people different options to grow.
Ooh, and maybe from this, I've got ooh, a couple of different offshoot questions. How do you approach kind of employees that maybe come in that are the target audience for the training? How do you temper what I think might be commonly understood, like resistances to that? Like, oh, when am I going to use this? I've got to take time out of my day. Like, how am I, like, when it is that experiential, which I'm with you. I think that's much more enriching and much more like the interactivity of it really helps to drive the message home. How do you combat kind of that, or how do you approach wearing down that resistance? And is there a way to just compartmentalize if not everybody gets there?
That's a great question. And I mean, and I think it's something we as coaches experience too with clients sometimes. And I mean, I'll actually lean on an answer that I think I use a lot in that space of like, I'm not asking you to commit to anything. I'm not asking you to change entirely who you are as a person after you go through this experience. I'm asking you to come in with an open mind. person, connect with other people, and try it. You don't have to actually, it's like, try it, you don't have to buy it. Like,
Yeah.
and that's okay. And I think that helps people get into that space. I do that a lot with courses too. I try to set kind of ground rules at the start. So, and one of them is you don't have to commit to this. This isn't something dictating to you. But if you're here, please know that you're impacting other people's experiences as much as they're impacting yours. If you're not gonna be open, if you're not gonna engage, honestly, there's probably something better for you to do. And I don't want to be a jerk,
Right,
but
right.
people are also adults. And
Right.
if somebody were to get up and leave, I honestly would I celebrate that because they're making a choice for themselves that's the right choice. So yeah, I don't know if it's a matter of saying, for me at least, hey, you've got to be here and you've got to accept this. And then I think just connected to that whole idea of letting people have that choice and giving people the agency to choose to be there. I've seen plenty of times where people are like, oh yeah, you're a manager now, you've got to go through this course, you've got to do this. And it's certainly important to give managers support because, like, I think we all have seen they just don't have enough.
Yeah.
But to require and mandate some of those things without having the buy-in from them first before they even get there, it takes away the choice that they've got. And so I like to think of it from the perspective of hopefully we've done enough outside the classroom before
Yeah.
that once you hit the space, whether it's virtual or in person, you want to be here. You're like here on your own choice, not because someone told you.
Yeah. Oh, I like that. And maybe it's the flip side of that now too, and maybe less so in generalities. Maybe you've got specific examples of you kind of alluded to, all right, you've done the training, you're coming back into the quote unquote real work. How do you make sure that it wasn't just, all right, that was a fun hour or was a fun 2-day workshop? Like, how do I really make the choice to say this is something I want to incorporate that is valuable, or that was fun, that was a good experience, and I've chosen to keep what I want to keep. I have, what are some examples you've seen that you're actually able to see the intended benefit that the organization expected
Yeah.
delivered through consistently?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think you and I have actually both experienced kind of the 3-day manager course training format. That is tough because while it seems like a great idea to get people together for that amount of time and kind of just get it all out of the way and get the experience really, really deep, I think there's also a downside of you're creating almost too sterile of a space. They can't put into practice what they're doing. And so one of the things I really tried to shift, both in the way I work and the way that we create content, is helping people to get something that they can use. And like my belief is that if you can't use this as of walking out of this classroom, again, virtual or otherwise, it's not going to help you because so often, like a great example is going through the hiring process. If I'm not hiring somebody, there's almost no reason for me to be trained on how that works. And at a
Sure.
level of, I might want an overview for sure, but I'm going to have to learn it again anyhow once I get to that point of hiring. So that's I think, a really easy one to look at. But then the behavioral stuff, like how do I have a hard conversation with somebody? Instead of teaching you that within the 3-day format, I'd much rather give somebody an experience where it's like, hey, we're going to come together for 2 hours. And in those 2 hours, you're going to spend 60% of that time actually practicing a hard conversation that you need to have,
Yeah.
or at the worst, one that you had that you think could have gone better.
Oh, yeah.
And you're going to do that with somebody that has no stake in you being successful or how it went, but you're going to get feedback from them and then go do it. Like, make sure you go have that conversation now. And so giving them not only the chance to practice, but then helping them to see the really easy connection point on how to apply it right away. Because when you don't, then that's when it becomes hard, I think, for people to then get back. Because then it's like, well, how many emails did I miss? What do I
Yeah.
got to catch up after being gone? And gosh, when am I going to take the time to try to get them? Because then I've got to teach my team or I've got to work with them on things to get things to. And so yeah, I'm really a big believer in like give people something that they can apply right away, that they can learn in a short amount of time, and that they can practice with other people that are going through the same thing.
Yeah, I really like that because it's too, it's this, it's the framework and the practicality of, hey, here's the setting, here's the safe space. Bring in what's important to you and use that as your example instead of here's the, here are these slides that we've tested and show to be very effective. Yeah.
And just having that level of personalization in the training goes back to that connection point of like, oh, now I care about this.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going through a breakout room with a scenario that someone wrote that, by the way, doesn't sound like anything that I've ever done in my life. But I'm actually using content that is mine and that's,
Yeah.
can put into practice right away.
Yeah. That's great. So maybe looking now to kind of the fusion of those two things, has your experience in moving abroad and whether it was the experience of doing so or your experiences since being in Spain, how has that influenced kind of your approach to learning and development?
I find that the way that we've traditionally done learning has continued to change in the sense that we've gone from a lot of places building their own stuff, doing a lot of things in-house, very, very like deck heavy, in-person heavy training, to obviously COVID, meaning that we had to like all figure out how to do training online. And plenty of people that did it well already, so they didn't have a problem. To then now people being in hybrid situations. And so I think from that perspective, moving abroad certainly doesn't feel a lot different from how people consume content. I also don't think the trend of people seeming to have smaller and smaller attention spans or less and less time to dedicate, I don't know that that's a uniquely different thing. The one thing I would say that, has really shifted my perspective. So living in on the West Coast, Pacific time zone, to be inclusive for all time zones, we would be up very early to deliver content that was reaching one audience. And then very like not super late, but later than 5 o'clock p.m. to
Yeah.
then get to another audience. And so that I think I don't really think I realized how much of a sweet spot it was to be on the West Coast that you could do it reasonably close to when you were working 9 to 5. Now I'm in a time zone where it's like I've still got an audience that sits all over the world, but the time shifts are so much harder. And
Oh,
so
yeah.
really giving me an appreciation for the need for facilitation and for people who can help spread content across different time zones. I think that's a thing that businesses commonly struggle with in terms of creating a level of equity in the learning space. And so I don't think it's changed, but I think my perspective on it has become even clearer, just
Yeah.
because it's become harder.
Right. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that too. It's funny as you led into that, it's like, oh yeah, those early morning calls, those suck, and those late night calls, oh, but they could totally be worse.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, you touched on it a little bit, I think, in that last answer, but kind of looking forward within like the L&D landscape, like where do you see the biggest opportunities, or where do you see the future of that space going?
Probably to zero people's surprise, using AI to
Yeah.
make it more personalized. And I talked about how you could personalize learning by having people bring in their own content. The models and the programs that exist like are getting so good at literally creating detailed learning plans. And that was one of those things that 3 years ago somebody would want a detailed learning plan. And I think we would tell this story of like, oh, there's a path, there's a plan, and you have to do these things to get there in your career. But it was never really personal. It felt a little personalized because it was maybe meeting your needs, but it was never truly built for you, Patrick.
Yeah.
Whereas now, I think we're at a place where we have so much opportunity to say, you have these skills and you need those skills. Here's how much capability you have in those places. Here's the outcome that you want to achieve. Here's where you currently are in those things. And this is how you like to learn and what kind of content helps you engage, stay engaged. build a learning plan, and oh, by the way, write a bunch of content. I mean, it can go even that far. So I think that like hyper personalization of learning is going to become really, really possible. What I think is important there isn't the AI, but it's helping people learn how to learn and doing it in a way that helps them feel empowered so that they're not necessarily always feeling stuck because their organization hasn't offered something or their manager maybe isn't a great manager. They know how to actually go and get what they need, use some tools, and like again, it's come back to that autonomy, back to that that matter of choice that people I think really crave. And so I think that's going to be something that we just continue to see shift all in what we're doing.
No, that's great. And I think too, it's the kind of begs the question with, like you're saying, like to nobody's surprise, AI. And it's, I think anybody working for an organization here says, hey, you've got to learn about AI, you've got to learn how to use it. Is there anything in that space that you think is how does one learn about AI that might be different? Because it's a very, I mean, very amorphous kind of term. And then what's the right way from your experience and your perspective to kind of plug in and say, hey, I understand this and I know how to use it and I know how to leverage it.
Right. I'm by no means an expert. I've like literally, it feels like it's been literally just a year of experimentation. And in the last 3 to 4 months, it's gotten wildly better. I think one of the things that, hadn't really occurred to me until just a couple of months ago is like, wait, why can't people learn about AI with AI? So like ask ChatGPT to help teach you about how to use prompts and how use it to do X, and so almost like learn it by learning it in a way. And I think for me, I mean, and this is a bias that I have of I prefer getting into situations like that and just experimenting, trying things, seeing what works, because God knows there have been so many times where I've asked for something and then it's come back with like gibberish of some kind. Or worse, early on, it would, I mean, I think we all know that that the AI bots or the chat GPTs, whatever they're called, they lie. So it's like they're often giving wrong information, but they've just gotten so much better. Like I said, I know I'm finding now that when I'm looking for something or I need help with something, it's a pretty reliable source. And so I think it's that, and I think it's just helping people actually carve that time out is probably the thing I see as most challenging right now. Because if people haven't built that muscle already around holding space and saying, hey, this is part of my job, learning and growing is here. So if they've not made that time, it's just really easy to fill your day with work. And then it's just never something you can get to.
And maybe so this is kind of maybe last one of the quote unquote hard questions, but if there were like one piece of like tangible advice that you could give for employees to kind of leverage learning and empower themselves, what would that be from you?
So I would say the piece of advice that I would give to people, as far as like, sorry, and I just want to clarify, maybe you mean in the learning space explicitly, in the like about using
Oh, I think
AI?
just in learning in general, if someone wanted to say, hey, as an advice as from a learning and development professional to an employee, how should they maximize and really own their own learning? What's one piece of advice that you would really give to them?
Yeah, thank you. I think it's having conversations with the leaders and managers that you work with and getting a better understanding about their perspective on learning, and because then that will give you indicators as to whether or not those people are going to help you make space. I think that's one of the things we hear most often is, I don't have time for this. And I don't know how to make time for it. And it's usually because the person that leads you or that, helps you prioritize things hasn't said, oh, by the way, part of what you need to be doing is setting aside 3 hours once a month, twice a month to build a new skill or to catch up on industry news or, get better at something that you're currently improving. So I think having that open conversation and just getting clarity there, because then the other side of it is that if you've got somebody who doesn't believe in it and who doesn't support it in a really explicit way, you then at least have the knowledge of this maybe isn't going to be easy here, but then you can go and find other avenues. And potentially think, I mean, think about obviously, where you're at and potentially think of, okay, is this the place I want to be? And so I think it's a really insightful conversation to have of like, talk to me about how you see growth. Talk to me how, how will you help me continue to grow and learn? Because I think once you've unlocked that, it makes it a lot easier for sure.
Yeah, I like that. It's building the context and being able to answer like not just what do you want to learn, but is this the right place and the right environment to learn it in? So maybe I lied. Maybe the last question on the quote unquote hard ones is flip it around. And you might have already answered this, but what is maybe one piece of tangible advice you'd give to managers to make sure that they are building this learning culture, they are empowering their employees or associates to really capitalize on learning?
Sure. That one's I think easier because I mean so much of the management practice I really view through that lens of coaching. And if you can do nothing as a manager, it's become a better coach. Learn coach. You don't have to get certified. You don't have to necessarily go through a bunch of training, but just like understand what coaching is and how you can apply management perspective, because then in that space, you've got the opportunity to say, how would you do this? Like if you've got an employee coming to you with a problem, you're gonna more quickly respond with a question that helps them think about it versus solve the problem for them. And I think that's just such a knee-jerk reaction for us. And often leaders want to help by solving. But the thing that we can do, I think, as good leaders and good coaches is to actually give our teammates the opportunity to learn things by doing them and by through versus just getting the answer. It's super frustrating because I mean, I had the manager I told you about earlier, Lisa. She would often ask me, well, what do you think? Like, how would you do this? It's like, God, I just really need you to tell me how to get through this. But at the same time, I mean, I gained so much from that experience. And I think, knowing when to apply it, because obviously if somebody's trying to figure out something super complex that's got a high risk, you don't want to be like, oh, go figure it out. Let me know what you do.
Or like, where do I find this file? Like, where do you think you should look? For? There's a clear right answer. Just tell me where to,
Exactly. Or say super simple things. But yeah, I mean, somebody comes to you with something that's a part of their job, it's something that is low risk also, but big enough that it's something they're going to learn versus just a task. Ask the questions rather than giving advice or telling people how to do things. So I think yeah, getting more comfortable with coaching, and if co coaching as a concept makes you uncomfortable as a person, then just get better at asking questions and being curious. That at the heart of it is I think so much good advice right there.
Yeah, that's great. Well, great. Like I said, that was the last hard question. So I'd like to wrap up with some easier ones, some more fun ones. Maybe thinking back on your career, what's maybe the one thing that stands out as like the coolest thing that you've done, or like stands out as like, man, that was awesome.
I got to have a lot of really cool moments for sure. Whether it was, because of being in the wine industry, I got to like try like just wines that I had never expected to try, or to be in places that I didn't necessarily, have any other reason to be in to explore. Nike had tons of amazing experiences. Like if I were to tell a story about my entire career there, it's just like just cool experience one after the other. I have to say though, the one thing that I would probably pinpoint is being able to go through a process of building self-awareness and getting further developed myself as an employee, and then getting to a point where I had a picture that I drew with Sharpies, like sketch, to really help illustrate like this is who I am, this is what I care about, this is where I want to go and what I want to do. And I mean, I kind of think back on it, I'm like, okay, I think the path was probably there, but I just didn't see it. But I had a conversation with my leader and with our organization's leader and was like, I felt like I was pitching this idea. drawn with a marker. And I got more. Like I asked for what I wanted in that space, and then I ended up getting more than I expected. And it was so cool to see that experience come to life. And I think is one of those things that, I think is so important to help people realize that they've got so many gifts that they just don't recognize on a regular basis. And so giving language to speak to that is just, it's just priceless.
The funny thing, I think I remember seeing that. I think you showed me that drawing one time when I came to see you. It must have been right afterwards because that stands out as I remember that very distinctly. So that's great. So then maybe what's one thing flip side that maybe you wish you knew earlier on in your career?
What do I wish I knew earlier? Okay, this is actually easier. It seems obvious, but so I started working very early. I mean, my grandfather had a tree nursery, and so like I was working for money, cash at that point in time, like 12, 13, 14 years old on the weekends, like just for, but I had ingrained in me that idea of like, yeah, this is what people do as they grow, as they get jobs, et cetera. So eventually as a teenager, then when I was able to actually work in a retail space, I had a couple different jobs. And then I continued to work all through college. And I think one of the things that I really wish I would have understood was A, what the services and skills that I had were actually worth in the market. And B, I wish I had that knowledge and then the confidence to, in fact, actually ask for what that was. I don't want to undervalue the fact that as a like cis white man, I am probably not experiencing pay gaps that so many people experience and struggle with. But I mean, it went from being 18 until being at Nike, and by that point I was almost 30, that I was just massively underpaid in every. I look back, I'm like, wow, like I shouldn't have been working for such a low amount, because it ended up really keeping me down and behind in ways. And then again, just for whatever the reason, the right person was able to say, this is actually what you should be making, and was able to get to that place. And that started to help life shift and feel different. And so, I think about that experience and I think, God, like there's so many people that struggle with just putting food on the table and actually, helping to keep their families together. Like it shouldn't be hard. It shouldn't be hard. And the freedom that you get when you don't have to worry about how am I going to work and then make everything fit and work paycheck to paycheck, it just changes, because then you have time and space to think about these other things. So if I were to go back, I think earlier on, I really wish I would have understood how that whole system worked, and what it would look like if it were different.
Is there anything for anybody listening that maybe hasn't made that connection or is looking to try and figure out how to do that? Do you have any like tips or advice for how to, get a sense of like, oh, this is what I th these are my skills, this is what they should be worth? Like how can someone help to self-assess some of that to walk down that path?
So I don't know all the specific sites, but there are lots of sites. I think Glassdoor has pay information. There are other places that you can actually do pay research. LinkedIn might have some of this now. And so it's not perfect. And I think a lot of people look for that and then expect to be paid X and then go into a job when they don't get X. So I would say like take it with a grain of salt, but definitely do your research, and come to the conversation prepared. So you don't have to, do it right away, but it shouldn't maybe be the first conversation. But when you're negotiating your offer and all that good stuff, like don't be afraid to ask for it. I will share her website if you're interested in putting in the note. I have a friend who's also a coach. Her name's Kate Dixon, and she actually coaches people around salary negotiation, paid what they're worth. So she has a couple books that are available. I'll share her info though, but she's a great resource. If
That'd be
anybody's
great.
asked.
Yeah,
Or you.
we'll put it in the show notes for sure. That's great. Very cool. Well, awesome. I think obviously you're involved in a lot of things on your own and projects. So I want to give you some space to share what you're excited about. Where can people find you? How can they learn more about you? Things you're interested in? Do you have any projects going on?
Sure. Yeah, thank you. So I'm on LinkedIn, so people are welcome to find me there, Ryan Reichert Estes. And then my business, my coaching practice, Stackrise Coaching, is also on LinkedIn or at stackrisecoaching.com. And yeah, thanks for also asking in terms of like what I've got that I'm working through. I actually have a new set of programs that I'm going to be starting to offer. So I coach clients currently. And I'm going to be bringing some programs that are going to really get after doing some of the work that I told you about earlier, like helping people get to know their best selves and better understand the things that they're great at. I think it's so important that we take that time and put that energy into really understanding ourselves, because so often we undervalue what we bring. And that's just even connected to the whole pay thing. If you're undervaluing what you bring and who you are, you're inherently going to undervalue it from a financial perspective as well. And so, yeah, I'd love to, I'll share a link with you, but I'd love to, share that. And there's a lab or cohort experience coming that people can read about and sign up if they want to learn more.
Absolutely. Yeah. Send all the links. We'll put them in the notes so people can find you. Very cool. Well, Ryan, thanks so much for your time. It was great to catch up, and thanks for sharing all of your insights and background.
Happy to. Really, really great to be here, and always good talking to you.
Now, I wasn't just saying it to say it in the interview that my path and Ryan seemed to cross at fortunate times for mentorship or thought partnership. And in each of those cases, I've always been struck by how casually informative and accessible Ryan's advice has been. I hope that you've all experienced that same sense through this short interview. In particular, I love the distinction between work that is enjoyable and work that is fulfilling. In my experience, those two things are often considered to be interchangeable by others, and while they don't need to necessarily be distinctly different, to Ryan's points, they can be separate, and they may need to be weighed against one another when considering what's best for you and your next career move. Now, if you're interested in more content around making distinctions between different facets of your career and what you might want out of it, I suggest revisiting our first three episodes of the show, which talk about building your career plan through the lens of Ikigai. Now, as always, if you have any thoughts or questions or ideas you'd like to hear covered in future episodes, you can send them to me at patrick@prgscoach.com. And if you have a unique career story of your own or feel as though you have something to offer the world as far as career development advice goes, I'd love to hear from you and maybe feature you on a future career deep dive. And with that, I'll sign off with a certain type of perfection can only be realized through a limitless accumulation of the imperfect. Thanks again for listening in, and we'll talk more in our next episode.